Today on Clear Your Clutter Inside and Out, we're talking about self-care and dying. Is your self-care mediocre or non-existent? How can you maintain taking care of yourself through the process of dying and death? What questions should you be asking yourself during the process of seeking better self-care? Learn how to take care of yourself as we continue our month focusing on going with grace.
Do you control your clutter, or does your clutter control you? On Clear Your Clutter Inside and Out, we'll teach you awareness as well as action steps to create change in your life. Come on, let's get started.
Today's episode was inspired because I've seen many caregivers. I know a few people who have lost someone suddenly. And during these times, self-care can be extremely challenging. Many of us don't know how because we weren't taught, or we don't think we have time, or we don't make ourselves a priority to have self-care when life's pretty good. But if you're caregiving for someone, if you are maybe have a loved one that's dying, self-care might slip and be non-existent. So I thought it would be a good thing to include this month as we're talking about death and dying and the process of that. Today's guest is a lot of fun. I did her podcast and did a couple episodes on, of course, clutter. I wanted to have her on because she lost her daughter, and you'll hear about her story and how it's inspiring the work that she's doing today. I believe in general, all of us can use more self-care. I've done an episode myself on this. I think I might have even done two episodes, which shows that it's important, it's a priority. But especially if we're grieving, and you know, you can be caring for someone and grieving while someone's still alive, grieving for their illness, grieving for the loss that's coming. As we contemplate death and dying, you might be caregiving for someone now. If you've been following me for a while, you know I'm a firm believer in planning. And I think it's a good idea to have a self-care plan in place. So when things are hectic, when you're grieving, when you can't think, you have something that can support you through that process. Let me tell you about today's guest. Suzanne Falter helps those who are suffering from trauma, grief, and burnout to find wholeness and fulfillment again. Over the last 15 years, her work has been featured in More, Fitness, The New York Times, Women's Day, New Woman, The Wall Street Journal, Self, The Christian Science Monitor, as well as more than 100 TV and radio programs. She's the author of How Much Joy Can You Stand? Living Your Joy, and Surrendering to Joy, as well as a novel, Doing the Box Step. Suzanne has spoken and performed across the US and in Canada and Europe. Welcome, Suzanne.
Hey, hi, Julie. Thanks for having me.
I really wanted to have you on the podcast this month because as my business has grown and changed, I'm focusing more on end-of-life planning and organization, but because we've had a conversation before, you kind of have a sense of who I am. And it goes beyond organizing the paperwork. It goes beyond figuring out what you're going to do with your Facebook page afterwards. It's about what legacy do you want to leave and what is important to you and what you do is a part of that. And the self-care, and I would like to talk about that. I'd like for you to share your story about your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, okay. So I have not always been a person who is very attuned to self-care, my own self-care. For many, many years, I was a successful internet marketing expert and really, really overworked. And I was pulling 12 to 14 hour days a lot. And this is while raising children. I really was getting up at 5. I was working after they went to sleep. I was just working. Okay, radical life change in 2010 took me out of my marriage. My kids had kind of grown up. I moved across the country, came out as a lesbian, started a different business. And then that too became very successful. And within 2 years, I was really burned out on that business. And by then, I was kind of wandering around. The apartment I'd had, I'd let go of, and the relationship I was in ended, and everything was in upheaval. And then all of a sudden, my 22-year-old daughter, who had followed me out to San Francisco, dropped dead from a medically unexplainable cardiac arrest. Needless to say, I was completely devastated, and for 2 years, I didn't work. I was just in shock, really, pretty much, the entire first year. And the second year, as I was grieving, I was unable to work, and I was trying to figure out what to really do for myself, because while she was in the hospital, She was revived. She was found face down without a heartbeat in a locked bathroom in her apartment. And she had epilepsy, and very, very rarely epileptics will just suddenly collapse and drop dead like this. So she was found and revived, but only to the point of being in a coma. And for 6 days, she kind of hung out in this coma before we took her off life support and donated her organs. And during that time, I walked into her hospital room that very first night, and I saw her all stretched out with all these tubes and totally unresponsive. And I just knew, I had this deep kind of all full body knowing that I was never going to be the same again, that I was being called forth to become a better person and to fulfill her legacy. Now, this is the interesting thing, you know, I was naturally sort of blown away and shocked, and what can I do? And I felt powerless and I felt confused. But at the same time, it all seemed to be part of some weird plan that I was just learning about. It was incredible, but ordinarily normal at the same time, if you can wrap your head around that. So I proceeded by going, you know, following each step and one foot in front of the other. And after her death, she had kept a journal of little phrases that were all about self-care and being a better person and living a healthier, stronger life and fulfilling your purpose. And she had mentioned to me that every time she meditated, she would hear these little phrases. So I told her to write them down, you know, like any mother would, I guess. And she wrote them down, and I found that notebook, and I set out to fulfill my need to take better care of myself and change my life and become a better person, in part by using the prompts in this book that she left behind. So I focused entirely on self-care for the next year or two, and very gradually got back to work. I lived for free in a friend's house. I had very minimal expenses. I lived very simply. And during that time, I learned so much about where I had gone off track. And I realized that my values had become completely askew. In fact, it was like a neon light saying, values, 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 in front of my face as I made this transition. And eventually, I became quiet enough and listened within enough to realize that I had never really known what my needs were, that I had lived my life by jumping through everybody else's hoops, that I had set myself kind of astray by needing to please people or needing to be a perfectionist or needing to get everything right. I put huge amounts of pressure on myself, and I was doing something I later learned to call overproduction. Like, I had to do something 10 times bigger than most people, and I had to do it perfectly. And the amount of pressure this created on me took me away from the people I love. It took me away from my work in a weird way, because everything had to be so perfect that I couldn't really produce a lot. Although you would look at my career and say, oh, she produced a lot. That was the other thing, because it never felt like enough. And it never felt satisfying, and it never felt rich. I was making a lot of money, but I was not feeling wealthy or abundant. I was feeling like something was always wrong. And you know, she used to call me on this. I remember one of the last meals I had with her, I did have dinner with her that very last night, but she was not all present because her brain was beginning to go through this transition. But prior to that, I had a meal with her where she said, "Mom, you just don't listen to me. You really don't listen." And of course, I cut her off and I was like, "Well, Taylor," and she's like, "Wait, that's what I'm talking about right there." And I have found myself to be a big interrupter. And if you asked my wife, she would tell you, "Yep, you're still interrupt me." But now at least I understand I'm interrupting people and I need to slow down and listen again, which never was possible before. I was hard at it all the time.
Are you at a point, there's a lot to unpack here for me. Are
you yes.
at a point where you can see her death in some regards for you as a gift? I mean, I can't imagine.
Oh, yeah. 100%. See, that's the thing. That's the crazy, crazy, crazy thing. And I won't get into this too much here, but her death also prompted a series of organ donations to people whose lives were saved, including the young woman who got her heart and her kidney. Her mom and I speak together on the stage about how we were changed by this organ donation and how we both learned to go within and improve our lives. But the reason I got into self-care was because I realized not only did I have mediocre self-care, but a whole lot of people around me had mediocre or non-existent self-care. And we are wonderfully living in an age where people are being forced to address the heavy-duty stress they're in so they can begin to make changes and set limits. A great deal of great self-care is actually in setting boundaries and saying no.
Absolutely. Now, I'm curious because I want to focus a little bit because you went those 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
What self-care would you recommend or what did you do to support, you know, this was a loss for you, an unexpected
yeah.
loss. I think self-care is so important, especially when you've lost someone. It doesn't matter how prepared we are for death. You can have someone who has been dying of cancer for several years.
Yeah.
On one hand, it's a relief, but self-care, especially after something like that, is huge. What are your
thoughts? Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I think the first thing I did was I gave myself permission to do nothing, which was very, very difficult. And many, many people I've spoken with around self-care, you know, I have a little Facebook group and the women in there are always talking about their self-care. And in that self-care, they're saying, "I can't stop long enough to even assess what I need." So I got into a habit of asking myself, "What do you need? What do you need right now?" And a little later, "What do you need right now?" And it would be as simple as, "I need to blow my nose." Or it might be, "I need a vacation," or "I need to change my marriage or my life or my job," or "I need a car that doesn't break down all the time." You know, we have a lot of needs, and often when our needs have been ignored for a long time, we have a lot of piled up needs. I need dental work, I need a vacation, you know, et cetera. I need more money. And it can be an intimidating thing. So one of the things I learned to do was to become very forgiving of myself and allow myself all the time I would need. Take 10 years if you need to really get to the place where my needs were met. That was one of the things I did, was to slow down and allow myself to stop with the relentless expectations. And you know, it didn't come easy, Julie. I got to tell you, I tried to launch a new business 6 weeks after my daughter died. That's called hanging on because I had no other choice, I thought. I was so unable to acknowledge that I didn't know what to do next. And I was so unwilling to not know that I was forcing myself to just do something for the sake of doing something. And I had a really good friend at the time who said, "You have to stop." And I said, "Well, okay, I'll stop for 2 weeks." And she said, "No, you have to stop for 2 months." I was like, "I can't possibly stop for 2 months." Now, mind you, I had plenty of money in the bank. It was okay. I had winnowed down my expenses to be very small, but I still thought you have to keep going. And I did launch a class, and you know, a bunch of people signed up and I led that class. And it was one of the worst things I've ever been through because I was so unable to deliver. And by the end, all these poor people were just like, it's okay. You don't have to show up for class. I mean, they were so forgiving of me because they were people who'd done my work, but that is not how you want to be out in the world. And sometimes you have to keep working.
Right.
And you know, then you're going to have to compartmentalize. But I was fortunate enough to be able to really stop and really assess. And I think getting that perspective, because the other thing I did, Julie, was a ton of journaling and writing. And I was having these incredible dreams at the time where I felt lessons were being shared with me. And I was reading Teal's little sayings in her notebook, and I was really thinking about them, and I was journaling about them. And they were guiding me in a weird way back to this deeper sense of self, which is now where I live my life from.
When you prepare for death, you can live your life fully. Where is all that information to your online assets, and would people know how to find it? What do you want people to remember about you? If you were to die suddenly, who would take care of your pets? Julie Caraccio can support you in end-of-life planning and organization. Visit reawakenyourbrilliance.com to learn more.
That's amazing. Now I'm going to ask you a question that might sound contradictory, so hopefully it'll make sense. I love how you talk, because I think it's a great way to, what do I need right now?
Yeah.
Off that, because I think that's very important. And I like to come from more often the and as opposed to the either or.
Yeah.
Good. And how would you say to people, always one of my suggestions I say is, when you are in a good place, create a plan. It does, whether yeah. it's for decluttering, whether it's for organizing, whatever it's for. And so if you're in a time of crisis, then you have something that you can refer to.
Mm-hmm.
There. So if you're like, I can't think, you know yourself well enough. So what advice would you have for self-care if someone could, as they're, you know, getting, doing all these different aspects of preparing for death, or mm-hmm. they have a loved one that's sick? What are your thoughts around creating a self-care plan? Or you might say, no,
well, look, being a caregiver is an exercise in self-care. And one of the things I always say, you know, sometimes you have to be very patient when you're a caregiver. You've got to be sitting by someone's bedside and they're really zoned out, but you need to be there. That's a good time for self-care. That's when you could be journaling. That's when you could be reading a helpful book. That's when you could be listening to a podcast. You know, that's when you could be perhaps resting yourself in a chair, whatever. You know, it's like whenever you have to be patient, is a moment to practice self-care. Sometimes people are caregivers to those who have ambulatory problems, or they're just, you know, taking care of their parents and they're really, really slow and it'll take them half an hour to get out the door. That's a good time to sit down for a moment and relax. Maybe you're going to count backwards from 20 and just breathe. You know, maybe you're going to make a list of all the things that would be fun to do in your life. Maybe you're going to, you know, listen to a podcast, pull out a book. Whatever it is, that's a moment for you. And P.S., caregiving requires self-care, not just before the person's death, but all the way through it. And you really, really need to allow yourself to grieve. Now, I have to say I'm a crier to begin with. I've just always been comfortable crying. But I put Kleenex boxes in all the important places where I spent time, tissue boxes. And I had one in my car, and I had one in my office, and I had one, you know, in kind of walking up the stairs. I had them all over the home I was living in, the kitchen. And I would cry. You know, you find yourself when you're grieving, just crying at random times where, you know, you're suddenly crying and you can't even remember what prompted it. Always, always able to just cry when you need to cry. I found crying while I was driving, I was like, maybe this is like not an approved thing to do or recommend to people, but the act of driving takes you a little bit out of your conscious, you know, radared self. Your focus is slightly different. And sometimes that's an easier time to let go. And it may be that you get going with crying and then you pull over and you really have a deep cry. You're alone in a car. Nobody's going to see you. Nobody's going to care. You can yell, scream, shout, say whatever you want. The point is to get it all out. And when you have reached a truly empty point, you know. You know, it's taken me 7 years since her death to the come to the point where I'm really, really comfortable discussing this. I don't cry anymore. The first, like, I started speaking about her death about 2.5 years after she passed away, because I'm also a speaker, and I was on stage, and I would cry every single time. I'd be like, not okay to cry. And the people giving the talks were always very supportive, and they would always say, oh, it's better that way or whatever. But I've got to say, I got really tired of crying all the time, every time something reminded me of Teal. But then after about 3, 4 years, 5 years, it started to really lift, and my grief was over. My grief was as over as it'll ever be. And believe me, there are moments when I still have a good cry, and I hope I always do, because it means I'm still in touch with the deep, deep ways that she affected me in her life.
I think that's really important. Just, you know, my personal belief system, they've just transitioned. They are in a form, they're in a spiritual form. And, you know, I know that people, I had my uncle and his partner stop by unexpectedly last night. I'm like, I wish we had more time to talk, because we ended up telling him about the direction of my business. And he said, I'm taking this Buddhist course and I'm on the Bardo.
Yeah.
So we,
the afterlife, right?
Right. And so what was fascinating about that, as he was talking, I thought, I'm gonna have to explore this more. Kind of it's self-care in a way to prepare for death, kind of from a spiritual angle. And he was talking about, you know, I want to make sure things are clear when I go, and that I've taken care of things. And he was telling me, since he started taking this course, like how he's learned to be more compassionate towards people. And I was just really impressed with kind of that, like he's trying to clean up.
Yeah.
Horrific, but was very, with that awareness of death, was like, what can I do to, as I'm marching towards that journey, how can that be a good journey?
Well, when we think about our own death, we want to think about what are the lessons that are here to be learned. I mean, this is my belief, is that Teal was my teacher in her death. And that when she died, just as my friend Debbie's daughter was her teacher in her illness and her receipt of Teal's heart and kidney. Debbie herself is very moved by Teal, as you would expect, because Teal's death saved her daughter's life. And I think we're all karmically linked in various ways, but I also think the purpose of life is to grab those lessons where you find them, and they're often buried in your biggest crises. And I'd even go as far as to say, the bigger the crisis, the bigger the breakthrough that's available to you. I have to say, I had a very dysfunctional childhood, grew up in the home of an alcoholic, borderline mom, and I had a very, very wounded little child self and ego and a sense of self-esteem. And so my work was to really uncover what happened, heal myself, move through it, and grow. And I didn't set out to do this in a results-oriented way. I set out to do what felt good. So it was in going towards what felt good, which I do believe is the spiritual path we're handed. Your spiritual path is not always what doesn't feel good. And I'm not talking about feeling good as being always comfortable. There are people who crawl on their knees to seek penance, you know, in the religious traditions. But I'm talking, and for that, for them, that feels good. You know, that feels like fulfilling and correct. What feels right? This is why I think it's so important to ask yourself these questions. What do I need now? Where do I need to say no? Who do I need to say yes to? What vision am I not holding that could change my whole life and put me closer to my deepest purpose? Who am I meant to serve? You know, these are the fundamental questions of our life. So in writing my book about self-care, I filled it out as a book of questions, because that's what I needed to do for myself. And that's my little offering to people, is here are the questions to ask yourself that help you live a life that is easier and less encumbered with less suffering and more truth. Because in the end, we are really being called to be real. We're really being called to be honest. And I was not honest when I was a workaholic. I cut off my whole life from my neck. And I thought, it doesn't matter how exhausted I am. If I don't do this work, the work will not get out there. And, you know, I had some success because of my overwork, perhaps, but it was a very, very shallow, hollow success. And I kept thinking, this just doesn't feel that great. You know, I'm making all this money, but who cares? It doesn't feel that great. We want it all to feel good.
We recently, as you know, downsized, and I didn't realize until it's only been 2 months since we moved, and a month of that was dealing with getting another house sold. But I wake up most mornings now, less stress, more at peace, happier. We are back up to a protected wetland. I see butterflies every day.
Oh yeah.
And I realized pretty quickly you were just connected. We had trees in the backyard, but we backed up to a busy street, and I wasn't connected to nature as deeply as I needed to be. And that,
yeah.
And letting go of stuff, we're about to let go of more stuff, and how. And so for some people, they see that as not losing, but as unsuccessful. Like, why would you want to give away more stuff or release it or whatever? And it's about, you're right, being authentic and walking that path and being like, I don't expect anyone else to understand it, but it's working for me.
You know, I'll tell you, you're bringing up a great thing, because the connecting to nature is a critical, critical piece of this. And it is in nature that we can really hear ourselves and our needs more clearly. I lived in nature down a dirt road in a really remote place for about 12 years. And my ability to kind of connect with what was next for me was impacted. There have been studies about, the healing benefit of just 30 minutes of walking in the woods. The Japanese have developed something they call tree showers, which are forest bathing, which is the idea that when you're with trees in a wild setting, that the trees are releasing pheromones that you are absorbing that are changing your brain chemistry. There's a certain reality, like I mentioned earlier, we want to be telling the truth, and often we suppress the truth and we hide from it. But when you're out in the woods, you are often in a place where everything is taken away from you. There are no distractions. If you're smart, you'll leave your phone somewhere else, and you will come on out into nature and listen to yourself for a change. That certainly is something, you know, because I have tailored my work now to people who were like me, who believe they were so busy holding up the world, they couldn't possibly take care of themselves. And, you know, simple things like a 20-minute walk in nature, a half hour in nature, even if it's just to sit in a park and eat your lunch when you run out the door for lunch instead of sitting in a noisy deli, could make a difference in how your nervous system feels. When I was listening to you, I really had the thought that everything is vibration. So we're slowing down to a place where we get with a vibration that's really resonant with us, instead of overly intense. And we live in a super saturated, super overstimulated world. So that's another reason that being in a quiet space, whether it's our bedroom and it's meditation or it's walking in the woods, is so important.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up that point about, you know, everything. Oh. We're on the same page with that, and just how it's changed since being here, because I'm resonating, good word to use, with this is where I need to be. I was out of resonance. Other thing, and I didn't realize that how much I was until I moved and got into this different space.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things I'd like to do, and it is, again, might sound a little contradictory, but I like to have takeaways at the end of the podcast. So what take actions do you have? And if it's one, none, it's free flow here for you, would you suggest to the listeners and viewers?
Well, what I really know to be true is that people need, they need places to go, they need things to do, they need activities. So my job is to provide those activities. I really like to talk about self-care in a way that people can hear it. So I have a podcast, Self-Care for Extremely Busy Women. And that podcast asks people to stop and put aside half an hour to coach people who really need better self-care. Sometimes I ask questions. I really like to get out there and ask questions. I do that a lot on a Facebook group I have, the self-care group for extremely busy women, and people just drop me a little request on Facebook and I pop you in there. And I'm asking questions all the time on there. Why am I asking questions? Because the thing I really want people to do is go within and get in touch with their own values, their own beliefs. And heck, you could pick up a journal as soon as this recording is over for you and ask yourself, what do I need right now? It's that simple.
Perfect. Perfect. So let people know where that your website and where they can find out more information.
Best way I can share my work is with a book I have coming out December 3rd, Self-Care for Extremely Busy Women on Amazon. My work can be found at Suzanne Falter, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E-F, like Frank, A-L-T-E-R.com.
That's fantastic. Anything else that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Just that I really hope those listening to this take the time to go within and make the little tweaks and changes and nuances and sometimes big shifts that are required to get back to your own perfect alignment and your own beautiful glowing self-care.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Julie, for having me.
On our next episode, we're talking about living life fully. Go out, clear your clutter to create the life you choose, deserve, and desire.
When you clear your clutter, you can share your gifts with the world. Sign up for our free newsletter at reawakenyourbrilliance.com. If you've enjoyed Clear Your Clutter Inside and Out, please rate, review, and share us.